teams are kind of saying, well, that's besides the point. What I need to know is what's his future outlook? How much degenerative damage is here? And I think with the lack of information from your own team doctors, we could definitely see a guy like Tua drop. And others with injury concerns, I could see being impacted more than usual. I mean, that's something we always see in the draft anyways.
Welcome to episode 129 of the Cover 2 podcast. I'm Luca, and today I'm joined by Simon and, fortunately, by Mr. Andre Simoni, draft expert of DNVR. How are you guys?
Good, good. Thank you for having me, guys. How are all you?
Yeah, we are fine. We are still not affected majorly by all the impacts going around the world right now. So we could focus a bit more on the draft. For us, especially for the two of us, it's quite, it gives us a bit more time to process everything beforehand. Sadly, in a different kind of atmosphere right now, but football is still fun. So we are pretty excited about today to talk a bit with you about everything that's happening in Denver, Colorado, in the USA, and what's different there, but specifically about the draft. And it's less than 2 weeks from now.
We generally start our podcast off for the last few weeks with Corona update. Me and Simon always give a little update on how our lives have been affected. And let's hear from you. How is it over there in Denver, in the US? How are you feeling? How is your family? Is everything fine still? Or, what's happening with the virus?
Yeah, we've been home for at least 3 weeks now. Both my wife and I work from home, and the daycare situation with my daughter got to a point where we just felt safer having her at home as well. And I mean, we've got a nice house with a good backyard and front yard and can play outside and all that. So that's not too hard, but it's definitely affected my work schedule. And then throughout the last 3 weeks, as different orders came into place, there was kind of mad rushes to the store, and you couldn't find stuff like toilet paper or eggs or canned goods as much. But now it seems to be calming down a little, and everyone's kind of getting in the swing of things. And aside from not going to the office every day and not driving around or being outside, my life is more or less the same at the computer and doing the same work I do. And I've noticed the Wi-Fi getting slower here in our our neighborhood, middle of the day. Everyone's on it. Everyone's streaming on Netflix while working from home. So
yeah,
that impacts things. But luckily, I get most of my work done at the end of most nights. You know, I'm watching film and writing scouting reports and what have you. And there, it's kind of back to normal, not too different from how life used to be.
Yeah. I hope most people will remember you from our incredible draft recap of last year. If not, if you could, I already mentioned you work for DNVR, you could introduce yourself really quick.
Oh, sure. Yeah, I'm Andre Simone. I write about the draft, and I do film analysis on the Denver Broncos for DNVR. We used to be BSN Denver. I'm also the head of analytics, and we've developed some different metrics to kind of analyze players, and still do some of that, but that's more in the background. I'm more focused on the business side and really the football side for us. And we're a local company, but we do a lot of cool stuff. We do a weekly draft podcast basically year round with my colleague Henry Chisholm, who covers the Colorado Buffaloes and college football for us locally in the Pac-12. So it's nice to have his perspective, and you can find all our stuff at thedmvr.com, where we have a bunch of cool stuff, and we're still pumping out a bunch of content even without sports. We're going back and looking at stuff. So if you're bored but needing some football, and there's Broncos fans out there listening to your podcast, I would highly suggest they check us out.
Yeah, especially in that time. I mean, I have been a subscriber for around 3 years, I think, right now. But all that stuff you do over there is you get not only the view of the Broncos, but also of the AFC West. And you can use the knowledge you provide for, I guess, every team. So that's a recommendation there. Yeah, last time we looked ahead on how this draft will come out, and right now we are here at this time. First of all, how has the virus infected your preparation for the draft?
Really not too much. I was still able to go to the Senior Bowl. I was still able to go to the pro days here locally. That was right before things started to get canceled and shut down. So that was interesting as well, just being at one of the last few pro days and sporting events going on before things got shut down, but that already being in people's mind. And so it hasn't impacted that too much. I've been just busy in general with doing some other stuff at DMVR. We just had started opening a bar, and, you know, things really heat up in April when two of our teams are in the playoffs and we were preparing for baseball season and we were preparing for the draft and all that. So I've been maybe just a tad behind on my preparation than usual, but that's less virus related and more just life and company growth related. No, my preparation is more or less the same. I'd say there are fewer rumors pro days to stay on top of. So it's there's been a little less, you know, the rankings are more or less the same as they were after the Senior Bowl and after the Combine. There hasn't been too much change. But generally speaking, it's been kind of the same process.
Yeah, you mentioned all the pro days shutting down. Yeah. We have video meetings and workout tapes been sent to the teams. Do you think something will get lost due to the lack of personal contact scouts and team officials have with the players? Or do you think that won't be a big issue?
100%. It's a big loss in teams not being able to bring players in the building and really kind of get their hands on them, put them through workouts, have face-to-face interviews, have, the thing that really is lost in this is being able to give them medical tests right then and there in your facilities. And, you know, then it's smaller things that we wouldn't think about, but I forget who was telling this story, but it was a story about when Deshaun Watson came on his official visit.
Yeah, I heard that. That's a good one.
And, he, in the lunch room, you know, they kind of take a break for lunch and he goes and sits at his own table. The Texans front office guys that had been interviewing him go do their own thing. But as Deshaun's sitting down for lunch, all the different Texans players who were in the building that day stop by and kind of gravitated to him. And those are the things that really get lost in this. And, you know, the pro days, as much as the video pro days are happening, you can't take those numbers seriously. So what you're going to have to rely on is your area scouts who have been on these players' campuses, have seen these players play live, have talked to these players and people who've worked with these players for 3 years now. And you really have to rely on them and the relationships they have and the sources they have to really get the intel on what kind of people these prospects are, rather than relying on your observations just in official team meetings.
That was something that came to mind. Apart from the personal level, some players won't be able to show their physical skills in areas like pro days. Do you think maybe it's somewhat better because the tape is right now the true resource this year and officials won't get blinded by some freakish physical abilities, and that players who might not have the football knowledge, the understanding, the mind for the game, maybe those get sorted out more before the draft?
Possibly, or maybe what happens is people who performed well at the combine get overdrafted even more so this year. And this kind of hurt, this really hurts players who have dealt with injuries like Tua Tagovailoa or Laviska Shenault, because instead of getting to analyze and seeing the nuance with those injuries, so, you know, maybe it creates more of a black and white world. While before, with the pro days, we at least had more data on everyone, and you know, everyone was kind of on an equal playing field. Now it's more the haves and have-nots with who performed at the combine and who didn't, and who has injury questions and who doesn't.
I think mostly the small school guys will be affected by this, because they have no chance to make a name of themselves by impressing physically, so that all of the scouts start grinding their tape, and I guess that's a group who's will be largely affected by this. So maybe you can find some hidden gems in later rounds, or maybe undrafted. I guess that's maybe something teams look into. Maybe teams are clever enough to get to that point where they are finished with their evaluation, and now they can focus on those guys and make themselves in a better position than maybe other teams.
Yeah, the undrafted process is something that's going to be affected a bunch. The small school prospects are affected most of all. You're 100% right. I know it's been suggested by some that maybe this draft should become a 9 or 10 round draft, so that the undrafted situation isn't as much of a chaos and can be easier to manage through an additional 3 rounds, which would be really interesting. I think we're going to see a lot of quality players, more so than usual, slip through the cracks this year. And there will be more undrafted gems this season than we've probably seen in previous drafts. So that's going to be really interesting. Yeah, the front offices that are well aligned and really trust, have, you know, invest in scouting and trust their scouts and allow their scouts to have a voice, are going to benefit in a massive way, because they're going to have greater certainty on the character and even the medicals, and they're going to be able to have a leg up on stuff like the undrafted free agent period.
Well, you already mentioned possible changes to the draft and adding more rounds, or I guess teams will get a little bit more time to initiate trades and stuff. We'll have the GMs. I think it's secure right now that we'll have the GMs sitting at their homes, and every other staff too.
Yep.
Do you think there will be struggles technically and logistically? Because, I mean, for all of them, that's a completely new situation.
Absolutely. It's going to be a different situation not having that war room and having everyone in person. And as they're trying to figure out the technical aspects of that, I know they've been having some minor issues. I think most teams are trying to set up internal servers in most of their employees' homes to be able to conduct this in a safe and secure manner, which, of course, adds other issues of having IT people and all of that people coming to people's homes, and the additional issues that creates with the COVID spread. So it's, I think where we'll see this be affected the most is in potential trades and executing trades. Again, front offices who have been in place for longer, more experienced front offices who have relationships in place already and are kind of getting a lot of their trade talks out of the way now, I think will benefit, while teams who are maybe less prepared and are trying to play things closer to the vest might be hurt in the long run, because I think it'll be harder to get on the phones and make quick decision trades, because not only is the process of getting other teams on the phone a little more complicated because the response time isn't going to be immediate with everyone on that end not being all in the same place, it's also going to take, on our side of things, more time to have those conversations of, do we want to do this trade? How do we want to tweak it? what do we want to make our counter proposal and stuff like that.
Yeah,
that's one question I asked myself beforehand or afterwards, COVID spread and everything. Maybe it would have been a good idea to extend the pick timers for at least for the first rounds. I guess it hasn't changed yet that the timings were extended or something like that. It's the same as last year. So that might be something that's coming in the next days. What's your guess on that?
Possible. I think more realistically, what we're going to see is for maybe an allowance of bonus time if there's a trade that is trying to be processed.
Okay.
I think that's the tweak we might see.
If I understood you right there, you think that teams may be more passive if they aren't prepared that well, and you also could imagine that maybe teams already have trades in place when certain scenarios happen?
Yeah, I think that's what's really going to be the more key part of this is working out those trades and having those conversations right now. And I think more tech-savvy GMs and front offices will have a bit of a leg up. If I'm Elway and I'm talking to John Lynch and we have a good relationship, we already made two trades during the offseason last year and another trade at the deadline this year. And, you know, we're used to talking by text and we already have the bare outline for a trade. It's more of a quick text. Hey, what about that trade for the third? Are you good if we move up right now? And, you know, maybe that can facilitate moves a little more if the person who really is the ultimate decision maker is a little more tech savvy and a little more connected and has got their work done ahead of time.
I mean, what are the consequences? I think it's draft and something absurd may happen. And for example, last year with Cleveland Farrell, nobody had him at, I believe, 4 where the Raiders picked him. And this may cause some completely mayhem and chaos, and maybe we will get to a scenario which possibly very entertaining for us as people who watch the draft. But if there's a scenario where nobody accounted for, maybe we have big trouble for all of those teams.
I could see it, absolutely. I would bet that at least one team in the first 2 days of the draft goes over their allotted time and maybe, you know, loses their spot and drafts the very next pick. We've seen that happen in drafts before as well.
Mm-hmm. Where do you stand toward the overall plan of the NFL doing it this way? We have the EA Sports player walk-ins, the remote interviews with the 58 prospects. Do you think it's a good way to do this, or would you have preferred they postponed the whole draft for a few more weeks? Maybe months?
I think a case could be made either way. I understand their decision and think it was a good way to go about it. In the end, you know, teams are complaining and trying to make excuses and putting out reports about, oh, this will create this problem, this will create that problem. Look, in the end, we're all having to adjust, and the NFL can adjust as well. As we always say, you know, the pro day is just a small percentage of the at-large evaluation. The meetings at facilities, the official team meetings are only a small percentage. Like, look, the work's been done. So no point in making excuses. Obviously, it's not going to be perfect. But, you know, as the NFL has little ground to complain, every other sport in the world has been much more affected than the NFL, which has been on its off season and more or less been able to conduct things, business as usual thus far. So I think that while there'll be some adjustments, there'll be some technical difficulties here and there, for the most part, it's not anything that should prevent the draft from going on and being, for the most part, what it's always been.
Yeah. So let's get into the good stuff, talking about the players and not the technicalities of the draft.
Yeah.
We'll be doing our last preview episode tomorrow, which will go up on Monday, and this, I believe, will go later on in the week.
Nice.
Tomorrow we are focusing on quarterbacks, so last part. Biggest question I have is, where do you stand on Tua versus Burrow right now? I mean, I know it because I follow your coverage, but for our listeners, how do you see those two competing against each other for the better prospect at quarterback?
Yeah, it's an interesting question because Burrow's a one-year wonder and Tua has all those injuries. And they're both pretty special quarterback prospects for me. Despite those question marks, they both grade out as top 10 talents. That's I have an elite grade that only Chase Young fits that bill. I have a top 10 talent and then a first round grade. And both of those guys are right in that top 10 talent range. So yeah, they're very high end prospects at the position. Tua really stands out for his deep ball accuracy and some of the stuff he can do on the move. And Burrow was just phenomenal, cold-blooded in the way he was able to handle pressure this year and create plays, extend plays. The accuracy and poise he showed was just marvelous. He had one of the greatest quarterback seasons we've ever seen in college football, and he's the second-best prospect in this class for me, and Tua's the third-best prospect. Despite the injuries and despite Burrow being a one-year wonder, you know, they're both coming off some pretty incredible seasons, and I think they'll both be handfuls in the AFC for a while if they both go in the top six.
And it's kind of my horror scenario when Tua will get or drops to the Chargers, and then we have a division with Mahomes and Tua and Locke, and who knows, maybe other young guy next for the Raiders. You mentioned the injuries. It's another point. How much does the insecurity may impact their choices? I could imagine unstable players are more likely to fall and teams have to rely on independent doctors. So do you think it's possible that players who we would have thought are surefire first rounders, second rounders, will drop to day two or maybe even day three?
Absolutely. I think the more intel we get from Tua, the more his camp tries to push that, you know, he's back and ahead of recovery and looking good. Teams are kind of saying, well, that's besides the point. What I need to know is what's his future outlook? How much degenerative damage is here? And I think with the lack of information from your own team doctors, we could definitely see a guy like Tua drop, and others with injury concerns I could see being impacted more than usual. I mean, that's something we always see in the draft anyways, but this year more so than ever. I think Laviska Shenault's another guy who could be impacted. Yeah. Javon Kinlaw potentially could be impacted because there's some injury concerns with him. There's a few others who...
Ayuk just got his core muscle fixed, I believe, this week.
Right. So, yeah, it's going to be tough for those players, for sure. Oh. And then you wonder how their rehabs will be affected. Because, you know, it's not business as usual. You can't just go to medical facilities or workout facilities or, you know, it's not like the second they're drafted, oh, the next day they'll be in LA at the Chargers facility, getting looked at by the doctors, and we'll have a rehab plan and all that. It's all different. So it just presents all sorts of added risks.
And especially for players like Laviska, who is in a wide receiver class, it's kind of hard. Sure. It might be kind of hard for him where we talked about, I don't know, like maybe 10 guys who could be drafted in the first round, only from the wide receivers, and every day something new. And then you are one of those 10 guys with an injury background. Although you have maybe like a top three talent in this class, you might drop really far because of this situation right now. I think that's maybe a different situation for Tua, where we have a few, or at least the Dolphins, who are pretty frustrated, I think, right now about their quarterback situations for years. and you think about, okay, what's what other opportunities do you really have? You have Herbert, but it's talent-wise not nearly as close to the guys like Tua and Burrow. That puts especially the guys in wide receiver or especially cornerback classes in different coach situations right now. Regarding that, what do you think is the deepest or maybe best overall classes here position-wise?
Yeah, I think all considered, it's a nice quarterback class because that top-end talent is there. You have three potential top 10 guys. You have another, I'd say another three who could go in the top two rounds. So I think that's a great class. Obviously, the receiver class, I'm not telling you guys anything new, is a spectacular, historic kind of group. I will end up having five first round grades and another three who just barely missed the cut, and close to 15 with top 100 grades, which for me means those project as future starters in the NFL, which is pretty unheard of for a class, a group, a position where it's usually kind of hard to find a lot of talent at wide receiver in the draft. But this year, there's just an abundance. And the same could be said about offensive tackle, where I have six first round grades and 12 in the top 100, I believe, or maybe it's even 14. So this, and that's really a spectacular offensive tackle class, the likes of which I haven't really studied before in my time doing this. I think there's some decent depth at linebacker, though nothing spectacular, and you're lacking a little bit of top-end talent. The cornerback class is very deep, for sure. And the interior offensive line class, especially with those high-end centers to start things off, has decent depth, but maybe nothing out of the ordinary. I would say those are the deepest classes right now.
What do you think is the worst class?
We talked about it, and our opinion, we said it might be tight end or running back this year.
Yeah, it's definitely tight end for me. It's just a rough group. It was bound to happen with such a strong class a year ago, that there was going to be a fall off. Tight end is kind of a volatile group with that, especially with some of the injuries to top guys like Bryce Hopkins and Jacob Breland, that kind of hurt the class as well. So I definitely say tight end, and maybe after tight end, it might be edge rusher, where this is one of the weakest edge rushing groups that I've ever studied, probably.
Oh, okay. From those two, I mean, we all know Chase Young and Epenesa and all those guys. Do you have some standouts of those weak position groups, like one tight end when team picks him, the fans could be at least a little bit happy about?
Yeah, Cole Kmet really stands out. Just a physical specimen, really physical. Once he catches the ball, solid blocker, which is hard to find with modern tight end prospects. And promises to be a very talented red zone weapon, a guy who's going to have some ability after the catch because he's so hard to bring down and can really extend and kind of go grab balls. The more I watch him, the more impressed I am. On the edge rusher class, of course, you have Chase Young, who's an all-world talent. He will be phenomenal. AJ Epenesa, I don't count as an edge rusher, so maybe that's why I say it's a weaker class, because one of the top guys for me is an interior defensive lineman and not an edge rusher. But I do really like Josh Uche of Michigan. He's a guy who stood out in his games against some of the top tackles, especially Tristan Wirfs and Jedrick Wills, who in the bowl game really had trouble with the Michigan edge rusher, was fairly well-rounded as well. There's a lot of guys with upside and intrigue in this edge rushing class, but not so many sure things, and the guys who have the production, they're then lacking the measurable. So after Chase Young, it's kind of they either have one thing that you like, but they're lacking the other, or vice versa.
We have prepared some, we did our position rankings. I believe you did too. Let's talk about those deep classes, because I've seen a lot of variety.
Yeah.
all over the place. And let's go through some position rankings, for example, wide receiver, tackle, quarterback, and maybe even cornerback. Give us your top five of your wide receiver class.
Yeah, I have C.D. Lamb as the number one receiver, just barely ahead of Jerry Jeudy. Then Henry Ruggs would be my third best wide out. Again, just not too far ahead of Justin Jefferson, who's right there, and Denzel Mims will close out that top five. Those are the five guys I have first-round grades on, with Laviska Shenault just barely outside because of some of the stuff we talked about earlier.
Yeah, I remember you saying at the beginning of the college season that Laviska was one of your, I believe at this time, top three or top five.
He was definitely in the top five. Yeah. I think the top five might have had three receivers at this point last year, with Lamb, Jeudy, and Ruggs all heavily featured in there.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sorry, Visca, not so much Ruggs.
What about the tackles?
Tackles is really interesting. Talk about beauty is in the eye of the beholder. It really comes down to preference in a lot of ways, but it's Mekhi Becton, just barely ahead of Tristan Wirfs, who's just barely ahead of Andrew Thomas. And then Jedrick Wills rounds out that top four. And in a last-minute change, I have Ezra Cleveland ahead of Josh Jones. I finalized the top 32 for our draft guide, and the Boise State offensive tackle is just too talented for me to keep out of the top five. He's going to carry a first-round grade for me as well.
Did the combine have a big impact on your opinion on Becton? Because for me, he's number four. I have him. I have Thomas, Wirfs, and Wills ahead of him.
Mm-hmm.
Why do you think Becton might be the number one tackle in this class?
Becton, the combine, it gave me more reassurance, but really I don't think it created a ton of separation among that top four because they all had outstanding combines in their own right. What stands out for me about Becton is that his feet, his size are just an outlier more so than anyone else in this class. And the improvements I've seen from 2018 to 2019 have been so significant. I just think his upside is just that much higher than anyone else. And really, as I got down to it, especially those top three for me, Becton, Wirfs, Thomas, are neck and neck with each other. And so the differentiator is A, the upside, and B, what are the question marks I have for all three? Well, for Becton, it's his balance and sometimes reaching and getting a little too far forward and getting hurt by that, playing with more natural knee bend. Well, that's the same concern I have about Andrew Thomas. So if I have the same concern, but I think Becton has more room to grow and more upside and maybe the slightly better feet, which is insane to say at his size, I give Becton the advantage. Wirfs, on the other hand, right tackle for most of his career, like Wills, so that knocks him a little bit. And I think Wirfs is a high upside guy, just like Becton, and maybe more versatile, but he has less margin for error because he doesn't have that size that's going to allow him to grow a little more. And Wills, I have some more concerns about his frame, his ability to play at left tackle. I think he's a right tackle only. There's some small deficiencies in his game right now that I think could become bigger deficiencies. And I just don't see the upside on Wills that I do for the other three. So that's why he's the fourth guy in there.
How do those top three of yours compare to next year's standout Penei Sewell? Because, he's, I believe, right now the unanimous number one tackle for next year. How do you see them in comparison to him?
Sewell would be ahead of all of them. Sewell would be the second-ranked prospect in this class, and he would give Chase Young a run for his money. Sewell would carry an elite grade. Now, granted, I haven't studied him and done the in-depth look that I have on these other guys, so I'm not as nitpicky about Sewell. But Sewell would be the best offensive if that grade carries out through next season, assuming we have next season. Sewell would end up being the highest graded offensive tackle I've ever studied.
Oh, okay, nice.
Yeah.
Then let's move on to the quarterbacks.
Oh yeah, sure. Burrow, Tua, as I told you guys already. Then it's there's a wide gap.
And then there's a big gap.
Justin Herbert, who in the end will carry a first round grade for me, just based on the upside and some of the certainty he can give you as more of a game manager type. He is a guy that has grown on me, despite me being a bit of a skeptic on Justin Herbert. He has grown on me through the process. And, you know, that at quarterback, you don't have to be perfect, but you can make upside and high-end tools work the way guys like Carson Wentz or even a Joe Flacco have made it work at times and in runs. Then it's really going to be neck and neck. I think at this point I have Jalen Hurts just barely ahead of Jordan Love as my top five.
All right. What's the earliest you take Justin Herbert? Would you give up a top 10 pick for him?
If I'm a quarterback needy team, I suppose I could talk myself into it. Yeah, I guess at the end of the day, I would if Tua, Burrow, Chase Young, Isaiah Simmons, Derek Brown, and Jeffrey Okuda were all gone.
Okay. And just for me, how do those top five compare? Well, where would you put Drew Lock in those five?
I would put him ahead of Herbert as the third quarterback in this class.
All right. I'm okay with that. Can live with that. Hurts is, for me, is kind of a special prospect because he had all that adversity in college, and with his running ability, he's kind of unicorn considering all the other guys, even though some of them are also quite mobile. Why do you have him so high? I mean, for me, I got him at number 9 in my quarterback rankings.
Hurts is, this happens to me every year after the draft, is I'll be watching another prospect or a defensive prospect, and the quarterback who I ended up being kind of low on, watching them without, you know, that same critical eye I had when finalizing my grades, I say, boy, I guess in the end, Patrick Mahomes wasn't so bad. Like, there are things I like when I watch the tape here. Daniel Jones did that to me, or Dak Prescott did that to me, or Baker Mayfield did that to me to some extent. And Jalen Hurts has kind of done that to me. Luckily, I've picked up on this, and he's done that to me before the draft. Mm-hmm. And it's not so much that I'm high on Hurts. He's going to be a borderline top. He's going to be outside my top 50. It's more how low I am on Jordan Love. I think Hurts, we maybe are underestimating the arm strength, because a guy who was fairly accurate and able to push the ball to the sidelines and downfield despite being on the run and off awkward platforms, I think he's got some Josh Allen to his game, frankly. I just think we don't give him credit for that because he's not tossing up 60-yard bombs in the wind in Wyoming, but his arm is plenty strong enough. So I think we're overrating guys like Jordan Love because, oh, his arm is so strong, but yet he can't get those wild throws where they need to be most of the time. Well, Jalen Hurts is. And I think we're penalizing Jalen Hurts for the fact that he plays in that kind of a explosive offense, which certainly he's benefited from, but that's out of his control. You know, he's playing in the offense that he's given, and he's made the best of it. That's not something that I'm going to penalize him for. So I just think he fits the modern NFL. He's going to be able to do a lot of stuff off script. He's going to be able to impact defensive game plans as a runner, which is going to open up space for him inherently. And I just think he'll have success. Look, I've seen Gardner Minshew have success as a rookie. I definitely think Jalen Hurts could have success early on in his career and grow from there.
Okay. Did you by any chance see Joe Burrow's comments on the big podcast of Shaquille O'Neal?
No, but I think I saw some quotes from it about how he wants to be on a winning team.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. That's one concern for me because when I remember back to Baker Mayfield, for example, he said even if the Browns draft me at one, I will turn the team around. That's one apart from that he only had one great year. One trade where I say, does this this attitude fit into the NFL? I believe everybody knows he will be drafted number one and it will be likely he will go to the Bengals. Do you think, or is that a concern for you as well?
No, not really. I mean, I think it's a good thing that the top pick wants to be on a winning team. And I think there's a few different ways to interpret that, you know. And look, as a Bengals fan, in a sense, you should be happy that there's someone putting pressure on your team to be better and not be allowed to just be bad for 10 mm-hmm. years. You know, I think this puts the onus on them and forces them to be better at what they are. It doesn't concern me too much. No.
Alrighty. Then let's talk superstars and maybe sleepers or late round flyers.
Sure.
Who are some top players? Chase Young, we already mentioned him, but players who will be superstars, who will have an immediate impact on the team they get drafted to, who are those standout players in this year's class?
Yeah, I mean, we've kind of talked Chase Young, we've talked the quarterbacks, we've talked the top wide receivers and tackles. The guys we haven't talked about who I think really fit the bill as potential star players are Isaiah Simmons, the do-it-all linebacker safety from Clemson, Derek Brown, the defensive tackle from Auburn, and Jeffrey Okuda, the cornerback from Ohio State. All those guys carry top 10 grades, which means to me they would be top 10 talents at their position and would generally be drafted as top 10 players in most draft classes, regardless of the depth at the top. They're just all very talented, immediate impact defensive players. Simmons and Okuda, who really fit the modern NFL. Okuda's a plug-and-play man cornerback from Ohio State who's already, you know, slowly but surely becoming kind of cornerback you. He's just phenomenal in man coverage, great ball skills, length, feisty, competitive. He just checks off just about all the boxes you'd want. Though of course it'll be different in the NFL when you're not on that defense that's stacked with all that talent and having to go against the best of the best receivers in the world will certainly change things. Isaiah Simmons is just so versatile. He could play like every position on a defense that isn't defensive tackle, essentially.
Yeah, I think it's insane, his versatility.
It's wild.
If he gets to the right team, I mean, we already talked in a previous podcast about if he goes to the Chargers or maybe the Ravens with all the stuff they are doing, that would be really intriguing. If so, not maybe not for the Broncos when he lands in the AFC West.
One question regarding Simmons. Do you think it might be a problem for him in the NFL being so versatile? So that he kind of have to find his position in the NFL? Is he really a safety? Is he a linebacker? Or do you think it's more like a positive thing for him to play in the NFL, being so versatile?
I think there could be a scenario where he's picked by a team who doesn't want to use him in a variety of ways, but wants him to just be a strong safety or just be a weak side linebacker, and then he'll have a bit of a learning curve in having to learn those assignments, because in college he was allowed to freelance so much that he didn't always have to be assignment discipline and really fit into a square box. He can do it. It probably lessens his impact a little bit, but he can do it. It's not an ideal case, but I think you're still, for the most part, going to get the return on that top 10 pick you'd invest in him, even if you use him like that. So yeah, that's kind of my thought on it.
What about those small school guys? I mean, we have players like Dagger or Chin who are already well known to the broad public right now, who come from small schools. Do you have a sleeper for us who may be a big surprise for the general audience entering into the right situation?
I don't know if he's a massive sleeper for you guys because he was at the Senior Bowl, but Ben Barch of St. John's University, it's a Division II school, left tackle for them. Really, really nice player. Some of the best tape you'll watch all year, because anytime you watch an NFL prospect playing against Division II college prospects, they're going to be dominant, and Ben Barch certainly was that. So he's the first small school name that comes to mind. We have a couple, but it's not, you know, as we've said already, it's not we're lacking some of that depth on the small school guys than we would in years past. I know Dante Olsen, the linebacker from Montana, someone who my podcast partner is a big fan of. He racked up close to 20 tackles a game at Montana and could start maybe down the road. Maybe not as small school because he's still a Division I player, but Natane Muti, the left tackle from Fresno State, who will likely play as a guard in the NFL, is a guy I'm very high on and I think not enough people talk about. But outside my top 50, he could really be great if he can stay healthy.
Yeah, just looking up where I have Muti. I believe I have him. He's number one for me as a guard. He's
there you go.
Right ahead of Jonah Jackson from Ohio State.
So there you go. Muti's
we are talking about injuries.
Yeah.
Do you think I'm completely wrong there, having him ahead of Jackson?
I think you are right if he can stay healthy. If he's not healthy, he that ranking will look off in a couple years. Also, Jack, you sound more than it. I have more of a gripe with Jackson as the second interior O lineman than I do with Muti as the number one, though.
Okay, then just quickly give us your top five interior offense liner.
Yeah. Cheating, so I won't count him as my top five, but I really think Jedrick Wills, that's where his best upside is, would be as an offensive guard, where I think he could be dominant and one of the best guards I've ever studied, but we won't count him. I have Cesar Ruiz in that top spot, the center for Michigan, and then Lloyd Cushenberry, and then Tyler Biadasz with Natane Muti and Hakeem Adonijay, the left tackle from Kansas, who will likely be moved to inside. That would be my top five, and then you need to go down six more spots, so my 11th interior guy would be Jonah Jackson.
Okay.
And not because I'm down on Jackson. I think he's got a place and he'll be a solid guard. He'll be in my top 100. I just like some of these other guards and centers like Matt Hennessy or Robert Hunt, Shane Lemieux, Ben Bredesen, or even John Runyon, just slightly better than him.
Okay. Are there any perfect fits for you? Are there players where you say, like when I said that Simmons may fit perfectly for the Ravens or the Chargers, are there any players where you say, if the team gets this player, this will be completely, completely perfect for them?
That's a great question. I guess the first one that comes to mind as I just look at the top of my rankings is DeAndre Swift would look great in Kansas City with the Chiefs and that offense. I think Laviska Shenault, a versatile offensive player like he is, would be phenomenal with the New Orleans Saints. You think of the things that staff has been able to do with similar hybrid players like Jimmy Graham or Alvin Kamara or Reggie Bush, and what they could, you know, Taysom Hill, what they could do with Laviska Shenault would be out of this world, truly out of this world. I think Trayvon Diggs, the cornerback for Alabama, is a guy I look at, and I think you put him in Seattle, he could really be a star, because that's exactly the type of cornerback they covet, the type of perfect just system fit for them. So there's a couple that come to mind right off the bat.
Yeah, you mentioned the cornerbacks. What's your top five there? Because it's a deep class, and especially there, I've seen so much difference in experts. Yeah. who have this player at one and another player at five, and the other one has completely round. What's your top five for the cornerbacks?
Yeah, I'm the same way, and I'll tell you, I've got my top two locked in, but I'm still ironing out the rest of this top 10 because there is such variance. What I'm ending up on right now, and again, this it's just so fluid. I'm going to give you like my top 12 because it's
okay.
It's that fluid right now. Obviously, Okuda's my top guy. Gladney would be my second one out of TCU. Just love the competitive edge he plays with. Trayvon Diggs is third on that list with Noah Ai of Auburn right behind him. And then it's Christian Fulton right in front of CJ Henderson. And there's kind of like tiers within tiers of that group. And then it's Bryce Hall for me of Virginia, ahead of Damon Arnett of Ohio State, who's in front of AJ Terrell, and then Troy Pride Jr. of Notre Dame with Jalen Johnson of Utah. Those are really the top guys who I think will all be gone in the first 2 days of the draft and will all be starters in their rookie seasons, assuming they're healthy.
So no love for Cameron Dantzler.
Yeah, no love for Dantzler, who's in that next group with guys like Darnay Holmes and Michael Ojemudia of Iowa and AJ Green of Oklahoma State.
That's interesting because, like, I have Dantzler is my number five. Fulton, have you mentioned Fulton?
Christian Fulton? Yeah. He was sixth. Yeah.
He's my number two, for example. So. Oh, really, really excited to see how this pans out.
Yeah. Me too.
I don't know how much of your work you can share with us. I believe your last mock I saw on the website was from March. Do you have one coming in the next few days?
I'll definitely have one coming, if not this week, draft week early on. I'd be happy to run you through what I'm thinking right now. If there's any particular teams you have questions about or, scenarios you want to throw my way.
Yeah, sure. Do you have something like the Andre Simone special, something not many people expect? Do you use traits in your draft?
I probably will in the last one. I did in the first one and shied away from doing it in the second one. I really believe the quarterback market will make it so that someone moves up to the third pick, where the Lions are happy to move down a couple spots because they know they'll still get Okuda or Isaiah Simmons or at worst Derek Brown when they move down. So I could easily see a quarterback go third overall. And I think the more I think about it, the more I think it'll be Herbert and not Tua. And I, as a Broncos fan, who's hoping the quarterbacks go in the top 14 so that a non-quarterback drops, I'm very afraid that Tua will drop some this year and potentially even outside of the top 20.
Oh, okay. Some picks I'm really interested in. For example, we had some discussions before we started the recording about the Panthers Jaguars top 10 situation with Brown and Simmons. Do you see those two are fits for those two teams, and who's the better fit for the other team?
Yeah, interesting, because this will be the first draft under the Panthers' new everything. New owner, new, front office, new coach, new assistant coaches. It's all new. The coaches don't have NFL backgrounds, so we have no real way to track what they're thinking and what they're gonna do. I could very easily see them trading down. I think that the Panthers, though, are potentially, depending on what happens with Tua, in a perfect position to snatch up maybe the last of the really good, those elite defenders that could drop to them. I could see Brown drop to them. I could still see Simmons or Okuda. While the Jaguars, to me, are one of the most enigmatic, or certainly the most hard to read team in the entire top 10. Yep. Because to me, the most logical move for them would be to, we've got a new offensive coaching staff. It should truly be last chance for the head coach and GM. Let's add someone, a nice offensive weapon like CeeDee Lamb, who can open up space for DJ Chark, maybe really unlock Gardner Minshew as a quarterback, see what Gruden can do as the offensive coordinator, and if this young offense has some legs or if we need to rebuild completely. And I guess you could also make a case for an offensive tackle for them. And yet it feels like the classic Jaguars thing to do would be just take someone like Derek Brown, or maybe even reach on CJ Henderson. So they're a tough team to read. If I'm the Jaguars, though, I'm moving down with a team like the Broncos, like maybe the San Francisco 49ers or the Raiders or the Cowboys, someone who's drafting in the late to mid teens. And just adding more draft capital to really try and rebuild, because every first rounder they've had in the last several years has left the team. They've lost a ton of talent and just need to figure out an identity and a direction.
And one reason I'm pretty excited about the Jaguars pick there too is what's happening with Yannick Ngakoue. We heard a lot of talking, mostly from Ngakoue's side, about not wanting to play there. And that's one option. I made my mock today. I was hanging there quite a time too with the Jaguars pick because I just can't know right now what to do with the big O-line, wide receiver, edge, D-line, and I went with Derrick Brown too because I said okay, Campbell is away, Jaguars are a D-line team, so let's go for the D-line again.
And who knows, maybe a team that if Tua slips, they pull the trigger on Tua, maybe a team that pulls the trigger on Jordan Love. I mean, if I'm that general manager and I'm thinking, how do I give myself more job stability, that would be a move, is draft another raw quarterback to give myself another 2 years of saying, well, wait, we have this new offensive coordinator, this new quarterback. Give me a couple seasons. Let's see what we've got.
Yeah. Sad that those things play into the evaluation, but it's true. Yeah. I have to ask, Simon is a 49ers fan. You know, I'm a Denver Broncos fan. What's your current prediction for the two 49ers picks and for the Broncos pick at 15?
Well, I could really see those teams making a trade. Maybe the 49ers adding back a third rounder and the Broncos moving up to 13 so they can get a wide receiver or an offensive tackle. 49ers are another interesting team because if someone like Jerry Jeudy or CeeDee Lamb dropped to them, I could easily see them going that route. Well, if Henry Ruggs dropped to them, I see them less likely to go that route because they seem to really target yak players, guys who are strong with the ball in their hands, not so much speedsters. And I wonder how they feel about Dante Pettis, the one speedster they have drafted already.
Who doesn't look good right now.
No, doesn't look good. I was not high on him coming out. And I wonder what will happen with that. So wide receiver would make sense. I wonder if they traded DeForest Buckner with the idea of just drafting another defensive line, or thinking, look, we have enough talent at defensive line. Solomon Thomas can take over that role, or someone else can take over that role. They could be in the mix for CJ Henderson. The fact that they have two first rounders, to me makes the Niners harder to read, because they could easily go receiver 13 and then corner 31 or vice versa. A few different directions that I could see them going in, and I think a trade to add a little more draft capital could be very likely for them as well. I will say this about the 49ers, looking really good, obviously coming off a great season. They need to capitalize on this kind of draft, because I think since Shanahan and John Lynch have been there, they haven't done a good enough job of drafting to where it's going to catch up to them sooner or later, if they don't get it turned around here, because I didn't like the McGlinchey pick. I didn't like the Dante Pettis pick. I think they're overpaying for Jimmy G. You know, there's a time to add some talent here. Or once you start paying Deebo Samuels and Kittle and Nick Bosa, you know, and you trade away DeForest Buckner and these kind of guys, you're going to be in a tough spot. While the Broncos, I really think they're playing – they're going to consider trading up to ensure they get their pick of a tackle or wide receiver. And I could see them in the mix for one of those better defensive prospects to drop to them, maybe even Kinlaw. And yeah, I see them as very likely to move up and potentially even move down, though moving down is going to be harder because I'm not so sure what market there will be to move up. 13, there's going to be a lot more of a market to move up, because at least one of the really talented receivers or offensive tackles will be left. 15, that market might have dried up a little bit, and there might not be as much of an incentive for teams to move up.
Another team I would throw in there are maybe those teams with several first-round picks. We have the Dolphins, Raiders, Vikings. We already mentioned the 49ers. Where do you stand on taking the best? For example, the Dolphins need a running back. There is a big discussion, not only in America, but also in Germany, on the value of running backs. Where do you stand on the option for a team with three first-round picks like the Dolphins this year on taking the best in their opinion, with maybe the last pick, the three in, I don't know, Jonathan Taylor or DeAndre Swift or Zach Moss? Do you think that's a smart move, or do you value running backs like get other positions first and go there later?
I try to value every prospect individually and not have general guidelines or rules based off position or what have you. And what it really comes down to is you're not going to have a first round or higher grade as a running back for me unless you present some real value in the passing game. Because those are the guys who are going to be re-signed to second contracts, the Christian McCaffreys, the Ezekiel Elliotts, even as much as they look like bad deals now, Le'Veon Bells and David Johnson, those guys never make their second contracts if they didn't have real value in the receiving game. To a lesser extent, you could say the same about Melvin Gordon, who that's a discussion for another day. So in this class, the only running back I would really justify that with would be DeAndre Swift for me, who I'm quite high on. But, you know, running back's a position where you can find guys in all rounds. That doesn't mean you can assume you're going to find an NFL starter, because that's certainly not the case. You can load up on third rounders and miss on every single one, just like you can at every position. So, you know, I think every case is going to be different. I could see teams like that justify, especially a team like the Dolphins with that many picks, justifying one selection being used on a running back. But there are certainly other positions I would prioritize if I was them. And the thing about the team like Dolphins is they have holes at, you know, premium positions like quarterback, offensive tackle, edge rusher, to a lesser extent cornerback as their second cornerback. So I would prioritize that and make sure we address that. But, you know, beyond the first round picks, they have multiple picks on day two as well that they can use. The Jaguars I mentioned already. I think the Raiders would be smart to go best player available, and you know, last year I was surprised to see a guy like Mayock not have that approach and prioritize high character guys so much, like Farrell and Abrams picks that I thought they weren't able to get the best value out of. It'll be interesting to see how that philosophy changes now that they have the high character guys in there. Is there a team, another team I'm forgetting with multiple first round picks? It's just
I don't believe so.
No. Jaguars, Raiders,
Vikings.
Yeah, Vikings, right.
Oh, Vikings now. The Vikings are really interesting. Perfect draft to add another wide receiver.
Yeah.
And you know, then it's their classic needs. Their head coach cannot stop drafting cornerbacks. He cannot. He needs to go to some addiction service to stop drafting cornerback. And they always need offensive line help. I mean, always. So we'll see. Because you have to replace Diggs with the strong receiver class. You have to, you know, and it's not just cornerback. They've lost a lot of talent this offseason on defense with having to kind of make some tough cap decisions. And they're going to have to add some talent on the offensive line again to stay as a contender out in the NFC. So they've got a lot of pressure to really, really nail these picks.
I got one more for you, but shortly before that, really quick, that second tier of wide receivers we didn't talk about. Who do you have as, because there are many, there's Higgins, there's Ayuk, there's Mims, there's Rager. Who stands out for you the most of those? Or maybe another one.
I like the bigger guys. So I like Higgins. I really like Pittman. The more I watch Chase Claypool, who had better production than I thought, I really like him. And another big receiver I enjoy quite a bit is Bryan Edwards out of South Carolina.
The last team for me would be the Patriots. We have many fans of them here in Germany. Are they in for a quarterback?
That's the million-dollar question. I don't get the feeling that they would love a Jordan Love. I could see them maybe making Jalen Hurts work, though. Of course, that's a drastic
change
for them. Yeah, absolutely. Of course, they would be the perfect landing spot for Tua. If Tua were to drop out of the top 20, you know, Saban and Belichick are so close. And I know that for Saban, Tua is truly one of the more special and important players he's ever coached and a guy he has a very close relationship to. I just don't think Saban would let his good friend Bill Belichick pass on Tua if he was still around. So that's the part that gets really intriguing. And yet at the same time, I think this is an organization that has shown they are they won't overpay or overdraft for just about anything. They're not going to panic for just about anything. They always have options, and I could see them going with someone like a Cole Kmet in the first round, and then taking that developmental quarterback that they like on day two. And, you know, maybe Hurts fits, maybe Jake Fromm fits, maybe a guy like Anthony Gordon fits. And maybe they just don't go quarterback at all. They let the board fall. They say, okay, Tua didn't fall to us. We don't really like any of these other guys. We'll draft Jake Fromm in round three as a depth option. And now in free agency, now that we know what our situation is, we're going to sign Cam Newton, or we're going to sign Jameis Winston, or we're going to trade for Andy Dalton, something like that. Or I could easily see them just saying, hey, we're going to give this year to Stidham. We think he could be really good, just like Garoppolo and Brissett and Castle have been for us in the past. And if it doesn't work out, we don't care, because we're happy to draft Justin Fields or Trevor Lawrence next year.
All right. Do you have another team, Simon, for Andre?
I think we had all teams. so no, there are many possible opportunities here in this draft. I've struggled majorly this time clamping a mock draft together, but
yeah,
it's fun. It's always fun, and it's fun to see what happens when it's real. And so there might be many. Many things we can't expect right now. So just fun to hear all the different opinions of many players, and especially opinions where we know there's some background to it and many, many hours of analysis behind it.
Yeah.
We look into it, beside our jobs and everything, but it's fun nevertheless. But it's always good to know where experts see those players, and we maybe see a lot lower on our big boards or draft boards or anything, and there are always people who go right into the first round. Always fun to see.
Totally.
Okay. Totally. I'll finish off with this question. How will you be watching this unique draft? What will be your last draft experience, and what content can we look forward to from you in the next few weeks?
When are you publishing this podcast?
I believe this will come out on the 16th, 17th of April. So end of next week.
Okay, perfect. So I can tell you. Okay, so yeah, you're getting a bit of the exclusive here.
Nice.
But by the time you post, you'll know. So for one, content-wise, for the next week or so, you can go to bdmvr.com. You could subscribe for the first month is only 50 cents to try out. So if you just want the draft content, because you're not a Broncos or Denver sports fan, you could do that, and that'll give you our draft guide, which will be updated Monday with our top 32, the next Monday with the top 50. We're also going to have a section that I call DMVR Gems with in-depth scouting reports on top targets for the Broncos, but really for a lot of teams at offensive tackle, wide receiver, running back, cornerback, linebacker, interior defensive line. So that will be there on top of the top 50. I will be previewing all the major positions of need for the Broncos. So wide receiver, offensive tackle, cornerback, linebacker, all the ones I just listed off basically in an individual piece. I'll be breaking down options at 15 for those teams. I'll have my final mock draft. I'll have my final top 200 big board with everyone divided up in tiers with the grades that I've been talking about through this show. So you can see all the first round grades, all the top 10 grades, all the late first to high second grades, which is another tier I have, all the second and third round grades, and then beyond that into the top 200, which is usually, I only have two, it's almost always between 180 and 215 players that I have with draftable grades. So that's what I'll end up publishing. I'll end up publishing my top 10 position rankings, which with the honorable mentions after that. So it always becomes the top 15 at each position. And then during the draft, we'll be doing a live show for the first 2 days. That'll be with my colleague Ryan Konigsberg and my podcast host Henry Chisholm. And we'll be doing a lot of stuff online with those live shows, fan interaction, graphics, all sorts of different segments. And I'll be writing film rooms and scouting reports on each player of the Broncos draft. And I'll be writing grades after each day for the AFC West and the league at large when it's over. And I'll have a little more draft recap content going on. So, you know, next 14, 15 days for me are kind of crazy and pumping out lots of stuff. And as I was telling my wife, it's just that time of year where I need to get back in the swing of, you know, adjusting to only sleeping 4 or 5 hours a night and just ride that train and be happy that I get paid to watch football and talk about football.
Now we appreciate you even more for taking the time of your schedule to do this podcast with us. Yeah, depending on the outcome of the current situation and your schedule, maybe we can do the recap like last year again. Let us talk and figure that out. Really enjoyed this and really love the insight you give. And like Simon said, the different opinion you provide in comparison to the mostly generic stuff out there. It's always great to hear.
Thanks, guys. It's always a pleasure. I always enjoy talking to you because I know you guys take the time. You talk about this, you break it down, you watch the film. So I love hearing your opinions. It's always a great discussions and, you know, highbrow stuff. So I really enjoy it and I really appreciate it. And appreciate you getting to talk to your audience, which definitely not too much intercepting between our two audiences. So always great to talk to a different group of people and especially all those great NFL fans out in Europe who have a soft spot in my heart.
Yeah, the reception of our last podcast was great, by the way. People loved it, your insights as well. Then thank you again. Have a great day. And
stay healthy.
Stay healthy, most importantly, you and your family.
Thank you.
And hopefully we'll talk soon again.
Absolutely. You as well, guys.